Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, March 31st, 2020. Sudanese officials release prisoners to prevent the spread of the coronavirus in prisons.
If you don't show us your compliance with the law within these few months, how can we trust you staying within the community?
And South Sudan government suspends weekly Council of Ministers meetings to prevent the spread of COVID-19.
Understandably, things will not move as fast as we wanted them to go. Regarding the negotiations over the division of the state, which party will take which state is undergoing, even in the middle of the COVID-19 crisis.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese authorities have released more than 4,000 inmates to prevent the spread of the coronavirus in the country. Some family members of officials of the ousted President Omar al-Bashir are asking the transitional government to release their relatives and place them under house arrest as they wait for trials. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Sudanese authorities say they release inmates committed minor crimes and were released from prison to avoid the spread of the coronavirus pandemic in the country's prisons. Speaking in Arabic, Aisha Musa, a member of the Sudan Sovereign Council, told the freed inmates to go and join their families and to obey the law.
If you don't show us your compliance with the law within these few months, how can we trust you staying within the community? We need to comply as well with all instructions that we have been told by our medical teams.
Sudanese Health Minister Akram Atom announced the seventh case of coronavirus today after a foreigner who arrived from the United Arab Emirates on March 14th tested positive for the virus. Relatives of the detained Bashir loyalists who are imprisoned at Kobar Central Prison have petitioned the country's attorney general to release or allow bail so that their relatives are freed. Speaking in Arabic, Ahmad Abdullah al-Bashir, the nephew of ousted President Omar al-Bashir, says he is concerned about the health of al-Bashir and other detainees.
All of these detainees are over 65 and have underlying diseases. And if any of them contracted corona, God forbid, all of them would not survive. If you look at the symptoms of corona, you know that it's fast spreading and it kills in a very short time, especially in those with a weak immune system. Unfortunately, these two factors are both present in the detainees.
Abdullah says Bashir was arrested in April and developed health complications due to lack of access to medical attention. He says Bashir's human rights has been violated.
What we know is that diabetes affects the kidney, the heart, and it also affects the sight of the sick person. So if they stay for a long time in the same place without proper healthcare, it is dangerous for their health. As I am speaking right now, they have not been taken to the hospital. We need him to be checked out.
Sudanese Attorney General Tajasir al-Hibir told a group of relatives who presented the petition that his office will look into the matter. Late last week, a committee formed to dismantle the activities of Bashir's loyalists freeze the assets of 52 officials who are in detention, including former President Omar al-Bashir. The committee also banned dozens of other Bashir's loyalists from traveling outside the country. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Health officials in South Sudan say the country is yet to roll out its COVID-19 preventive measures across the country's 10 states. Dr. Angong Gordon Kwal, incident manager for the COVID-19 pandemic at the Ministry of Health, says the government is working to establish isolation centers and train health workers across the 10 states on how to manage COVID-19. An analyst says although the country has no confirmed case of the pandemic, the government needs to do more to prevent the disease from reaching South Sudan. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan COVID-19 incident manager Dr. Angok Gordon Kwal says there is only one operational isolation center in Juba with a capacity to accommodate only 24 patients. Dr. Kwal says the country has at least 1,000 coronavirus testing kits.
Up to this moment, we are not doing diagnostic testing, where actually we'll be testing majority of people. Due to limitation we have, one laboratory credible to do the testing. We have very few kits, so it's not about doing tested. Only the suspect, those who meet case definition, are the one tested.
14 suspected cases of COVID-19 were tested countrywide. All of them came back negative. Dr. Kwal says the COVID-19 team in Juba has not yet prepared facilities or personnel in the 10 states to deal with the pandemic should there be confirmed cases in the country.
This is still minimal in the 10 states. As I told you, that the funding has delayed much, and once we receive the resources, we'll dispatch teams to start giving refresher training to civilian officers who are there in the area of detection, sample collecting, and safe delivery.
Dr. Kwal says the COVID-19 team needs nearly $20 million to boost preventative measures across the country, noting most South Sudanese in rural areas have little knowledge of the pandemic.
But we are actually preparing ourselves, and even if we don't have hospitals, we can make quick decisions of what to be done.
Kwal thinks South Sudan has no confirmed cases because very few airlines were coming to South Sudan even before the outbreak in other African countries.
Most of the countries affected today that are affected by imported cases, people coming from abroad. And in South Sudan, most people come to South Sudan are either South Sudanese or those who have some businesses here.
Over the last 2 weeks, the government has rolled out a series of directives aimed at preventing the spread of the pandemic, including closing some shops and restricting public transport. But South Sudan civil society activist Rajab Mohandis, executive director of the Organization for Responsive Governance, says he is not convinced these measures are enough.
I think this coronavirus disease is being so fair to us until this time that it has not been detected in the country. Otherwise, our level of preparedness here now as a country cannot adequately even respond to the needs of the national capital alone.
Simon Deng, an associate professor and a dean of medicine and health sciences in South Sudan's Upper Nile University, says even though there are no confirmed cases in South Sudan, the government should continue to implement preventive measures.
Up to now, there is no treatment, specific treatment for the disease. But what is advisable is preventive measures. Preventive measures, the movement is to be restricted, and also washing of hands is very important. And this, you know, crowdedness, gathering is to be avoided completely.
Deng says the government should prepare for a worst case scenario in the event that there is a coronavirus outbreak and set up isolation centers across the states. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Partners in the Transitional Government of National Unity say major activities to speed up the implementation of the peace agreement have been slowed down due to the fear of the COVID-19. The government spokesperson Michael Makui says the weekly Council of Ministers have also been suspended as part of the preventive measures against the spread of the coronavirus. Lasuba Memo reports for VOA from Juba.
Stephen Parkwall, the newly appointed IO Peace Building Minister, says the pandemic has stalled their work as they can no longer hold meetings.
Understandably, things will not move as fast as we wanted them to go. Regarding the negotiations over the division of the states, which party will take which state is undergoing, even in the middle of the COVID-19 crisis. Our parties, our delegation have been meeting. It will be resolved. Biggest problems, you have seen that now we cannot even hold Council of Ministers. No wedding. COVID-19 has shut us down.
Last week, the Joint Transitional Security Committee suspended all training activities that requires troops to gather and ban soldiers from visiting nearby civilian areas. The committee also imposed restrictions on non-members of the Canton forces from accessing the training sites. Kuol says the moves were undertaken to protect the public.
It is very unfortunate that it has come at this particular time when South Sudan is working extra hard to ensure that we have a unified force to politically stabilize our country.
Kuol says plans to graduate the VIP protection forces in 3 weeks will likely be postponed. Information Minister Michael Makuei says the Council of Ministers meetings and training of VIP protection forces will remain suspended as long as the pandemic remains a threat to the country.
But the clusters are working. The clusters continue to meet and they give whatever directives so that people continue to operate. Yeah, so there is no problem. It will not have any effect on the work is going on.
On Friday, President Kiir appointed 9 members to the Transitional Committee on the Implementation of the Security Arrangements, a new body to implement security activities. Makuei says although ministers' meetings are suspended for now, it has not stopped efforts to implement the peace agreement.
Clusters continue to meet and they give whatever directives so that people continue to operate. People should not worry because the coronavirus will not have any negative impact or as such on the implementation of the agreement. The process is moving as planned.
Zakaria Ding, a policy analyst at the Juba-based South Institute, says the pandemic will have a negative effect on implementing the peace agreement because efforts have been redirected to combat the pandemic.
In terms of attention has shifted away from everything else to measures that are necessary to contain the situation.
Right.
So I think that is obvious. So if you think of it in terms of the resources that the country needs, in order for it to move forward, like by country, I mean South Sudan. They begin with the resources that are needed to implement the agreement. Some are supposed to come from within, and some are supposed to come from outside. Both means are affected.
Ding says the country's officials will be lying to themselves if they don't think the peace process will be affected by efforts to fight the pandemic. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what are scientists doing to develop treatment for the coronavirus? Stay tuned for an answer to that question right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when you make a mistake, do you admit it or just move on and try not to do it again?
When I realize that I've done something wrong, but of course I have to make sure that I make a correction out of what I have done. Because sometimes there are things we do them and afterwards you learn from them as such.
It depends on the mistake, but most of the time I tend to realize my mistakes. And where it is necessary, I apologize. Why should I keep on moving when I've made a mistake? I've made a mistake, I have to apologize.
When I've done something wrong, I do admit. At the same time, I choose to move forward with my life.
Well, it is hard to admit mistakes. So yeah, usually the first option is to move on and try not to do it again. I think that's my first go-to option.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. In our Tuesday's health segment, we will take a look at efforts to develop testing for the coronavirus. As pharmaceutical companies work to develop new and faster methods of testing, they could run into a whole new problem. VOA's Jason Patenkin spoke with Dr. Michael Ostlund, director of the University of Minnesota Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, who warns of a looming shortage of the chemicals used in those tests.
One of the big challenges we face is that culturally we lead very communal lifestyles. So we have a lot of homes where multiple generations of family members live together, a lot of informal care networks in our communities where everybody takes care of everybody else. So if you tell people, don't ask grandmother or your aunt to watch your kid, that's unusual and it makes it hard for you to shelter in place. Or if you have an adult sibling or a neighbor who relies on you for a meal once a week, or just to check in and make sure they're okay, and you take that away from somebody, it makes it hard for them to live their daily lives. So when you have folks who rely upon those community care networks, and you layer on top of that a cultural way of life that is built around being together, it makes you especially vulnerable to the spread of infectious disease.
What about in terms of the healthcare aspect?
In our community, we have a pretty well-developed tribal healthcare system and health center, but it's what we call a primary care facility. We don't have intensive care units on our reservation. We don't have ventilators, and we have actually very few test kits for the coronavirus or other protective equipment for the healthcare workers. The nearest hospital is 25 miles away in a city on the border with Canada. And they have very few beds in general, very few intensive care unit beds, and then even fewer ventilators. And so if you have people in our community who get sick, they're going to be transported 25 miles away, competing with others off the reservation for those types of resources. Now, there are a lot of tribal communities in the United States that are even more rural and remote than we are. And in some places, they might be 100 miles from a hospital with intensive care units and ventilators. People in those communities often have very few resources to make those trips on their own. Very few tribal communities have access to the type of care you would need if you contracted the coronavirus.
Are the needs of tribal nations in the United States being listened to in the discussions? Are they even in the discussions at the federal level?
Not on a consistent basis. There are, of course, members of Congress who take tribal issues very seriously, either because they're members of tribes themselves or represent tribes or just have an awareness of federal government's obligation. But if you look across the U.S. government, Indian tribes and Indian affairs and Indian healthcare often go at the bottom of the list when it comes to budget priorities.
What are the things that you think tribal nations really need the most from the federal government right now?
Well, it's going to vary from tribe to tribe because some tribes have a lot of resources and other tribes have very little resources. With my tribe and with our community here, our most important need right now is having the ability to test our tribal members, because if we can test folks on a broad scale, that will allow us to isolate those who are sick and then trace the folks that they've been in contact with and quarantine them to keep it from spreading in our community.
with any community on Earth, a disease that seems to target the elderly is vicious. But particularly for tribes, I think it's even more so because of the knowledge, the history, the culture, the language that resides in those elderly individuals. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, you really hit the nail on the head, because for a lot of tribes, the ability to speak our languages fluently has diminished over the years because of federal government policies and education policies. Indian children were basically told, you are not allowed to speak your language or you'll be punished. So the people who have the ability to pass that knowledge on are the most vulnerable from the coronavirus. In some tribal communities, there may only be two or three people who have that ability to speak their language fluently. Losing that connection with your culture would be devastating to your very existence, our very existence as indigenous people.
That's VOA's Jason Patenkin speaking to Dr. Michael Oslin, director of the University of Minnesota's Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy. Still on COVID-19, Nigeria's two main cities, Abuja and Lagos, are preparing to go on lockdown to help prevent the spread of the coronavirus. The arrival of the coronavirus testing kits donated by a Chinese billionaire is expected to give officials a more accurate reading of the corona infections in Africa's most populous nation. But there are also concerns on how the public could react to a jump in infection numbers and a lockdown. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The lockdown announcement was made during President Muhammadu Buhari's national broadcast. Normal activities in Lagos, Abuja, and Ogun near Lagos are expected to shut down for 14 days, starting late Monday night.
Some of these measures will surely cause major inconveniences to many citizens, but these are sacrifices we should all be willing and ready to make for the greater good of our country.
Hours after the announcement, thousands of citizens stormed shopping malls in Abuja in what appears to be panic buying. Abuja residents like Daniel Yerima say the shutdown is a necessary move to control the coronavirus from spreading.
Personally, I think it's long overdue, and I'm not really satisfied with how the government has been handling the whole situation. But with the president eventually coming out to announce a lockdown, I think it's a beautiful decision, and I hope that this decision would help us control the situation on ground.
However, he has some concerns.
I don't believe many citizens can stay remain indoors for 2 weeks. It's not possible because the majority of the citizens live below the poverty line. Even 1 week, it's not possible for them to remain indoors for 1 week without any income.
Since new testing kits donated by Chinese billionaire Jack Ma arrived in Nigeria last week, more testing has been carried out and more cases discovered. Chinwe Ochu is the head of prevention programs at NCDC. She says the kits are essential to containing the virus.
Our objective is to stop transmission. And to do this, we want to have early detection of cases, early reporting, early case investigation, isolation and treatment, early contact tracing, and early social distancing.
With more than 100 confirmed cases of the virus in Nigeria so far, authorities are working hard and say they are ready to impose even more drastic measures if need be in order to control the spread. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
Residents and traders in the South Sudan capital, Juba, say prices of food and non-food items are increasing due to the recent closure of the Uganda-South Sudan border. Ugandan authorities temporarily closed the Elegu-Nimule border crossing point last Saturday. Traders and residents say they anticipate a shortage in the supply of consumer and non-consumer items in Juba. Ding Magot reports for VOA from Juba.
While some commodity prices have remained constant, other prices have jumped following the closure of the Uganda-South Sudan border crossing point at Elegu. A kilogram of sugar, which used to cost 230 South Sudanese pounds, now costs an average 300 pounds. a kilogram of rice used to cost 250 South Sudanese pounds a couple of weeks ago. It now costs 400 South Sudanese pounds. And a 50-kilogram bag of maize flour, which used to cost 9,500 South Sudanese pounds, now costs 10,500 South Sudanese pounds. 22-year-old Thomas Ladu, who lives in Juba's Jebel Market area, says the jump in commodity prices will affect mostly low-income earners.
Because, you know, people are not different. There's people who have money and there's others who doesn't have. For those who doesn't have, they can suffer.
24-year-old Ador Majung Garang, who works in a hair salon in Konyokonyo Market, says she uses the money she earns from the salon to take care of her parents. She says the money she makes now can only buy a few items in the market.
When I asked the sack of beans, that was like 50 kg. They were like 17,000. When I asked for a rice, they said 7,000. Then cooking oil jerrican, 6,000. Then when I asked for a zam, they were like 87.
18-year-old Bashir Ahmed is a Ugandan trader selling toiletries in Konyokonyo Market. Ahmed says he normally gets his supplies from the Uganda-South Sudan border and fears now with the border closed, he won't be able to restock his toll.
I think it's gonna be worse because right now prices are going high. Then this is gonna be a problem. We don't know. Like that day, imagine soap, the box was 3,000. Right now it jumped up to 4,000. How can you see the difference of 1,000 SSP?
29-year-old Siraje Kasi is a Ugandan trader selling footwear in Juba's Konyokonyo Market. He says commodity prices are increasing because while there is a demand for goods in Juba's markets, there is a low supply due to the border closing.
People are fearing, and to bring new things like this, our bosses are fearing to bring. That any time the corona may exist in the country, they are keeping their money. Like that. It has affected us that there are no new things on the market.
While the Uganda-South Sudan border remains closed, trucks transporting cargo, including food items, are allowed to cross to and from either side. Vice President Wani Iga assured South Sudanese a week ago that the Ugandan borders will remain open for goods entering the country. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Mara Batal by Kozos Clan.
Oh yeah, Junub. Ha, yeah. Nas dunia kulu. Nas dunia. Deswala lekum. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah. Kan mara batal. Wadidin batal. Mara batal. Mara batal. Yeah. Oh, still a man records. Oh, oh. Yeah, mara batal. Ya jama mara batal. Tamu luke mara batal. Ya jama mara batal. Tamu luke.
We have been listening to Pozos Clan with the song Mara Batal. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for listening, and remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
For few mara batal kan fibet ma believe ku mash sa ashan uo itala fibet mara batal kanale ana ma bidugu ashan uo insan ze ana many men mara batal ma bam siku quest mara batal inua yam to barao mara batal matagule ana
mara batal ya jama mara batal amuluke mara batal.